Blessed One addressed the monks of the group of five thus. "Venerable sir," those monks replied. The Blessed One said this, "Monks, form is non-self, for if monks' form were self, this form would not lead to affliction, and it would be possible to determine form. Let my form be thus, let my form not be thus. But because form is non-self, form leads to affliction, and it is not possible to determine form. Let my form be thus, let my form not be thus. Feeling is non-self. Perception is non-self. Volitional formations are non-self. Consciousness is non-self. For if monks, consciousness were self, this consciousness would not lead to affliction, and it would be possible to determine consciousness. Let my consciousness be thus. Let my consciousness not be thus. But because consciousness is non-self, consciousness leads to affliction, and it is not possible to determine consciousness. Let my consciousness be thus, let my consciousness not be thus. What do you think, monks? Is form permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change fit to be regarded thus? This is mine. This I am. This is myself. No, venerable sir. Is feeling permanent or impermanent? Is perception permanent or impermanent? Are volitional formations permanent or impermanent? Is consciousness permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself? No, venerable sir. Therefore, monks, any kind of form whatsoever, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, all form should be seen as it really is with correct wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. Any kind of feeling whatsoever, any kind of perception whatsoever, any kind of volitional formations whatsoever, any kind of consciousness whatsoever, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, all consciousness should be seen as it really is with correct wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. Seeing thus, monks, the instructed noble disciple becomes disenchanted with form, disenchanted with feeling, disenchanted with perception, disenchanted with volitional formations, disenchanted with consciousness. Becoming disenchanted, he becomes dispassionate. Through dispassion, his mind is liberated. When it is liberated, there comes the knowledge. It's liberated. He understands. Destroyed is birth. The spiritual life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming back to any state of being. That is what the Blessed One said. Elated, those monks delighted in the Blessed One's statement. And while this discourse was being spoken, the minds of the monks of the group of five were liberated from the taints by non-clinging. Samyutta Nikaya 22:59-3, 66-68. D. Impermanent, suffering, non-self. Monks, form is impermanent. What is impermanent is suffering. What is suffering is non-self. What is non-self should be seen as it really is with correct wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. When one sees this thus as it really is with correct wisdom, the mind becomes dispassionate and is liberated from the taints by non-clinging. Feeling is impermanent. Perception is impermanent. Volitional formations are impermanent. Consciousness is impermanent. What is impermanent is suffering. What is suffering is non-self. What is non-self should be seen as it really is with correct wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. When one sees this thus as it really is with correct wisdom, the mind becomes dispassionate and is liberated from the taints by non-clinging. If, monks, a monk's mind has become dispassionate toward the form element, it is liberated from the taints by non-clinging. If his mind has become dispassionate toward the feeling element, toward the perception element, toward the volitional formations element, toward the consciousness element, it is liberated from the taints by non-clinging. By being liberated, it is steady. By being steady, it is content. By being content, he is not agitated. Being unagitated, he personally attains Nibbana. He understands. Destroyed is birth. The spiritual life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming back to any state of being. Samyutta Nikaya, 22, 45, 3, 44 through 45. E. A lump of foam. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Ayodhya on the bank of the river Ganges. There, the Blessed One addressed the monks thus. Monks, suppose that this river Ganges was carrying along a great lump of foam. A man with good sight would inspect it, ponder it, and carefully investigate it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in a lump of foam? So too, monks, whatever kind of foam there is, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, a monk inspects it, ponders it, and carefully investigates it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in form? For what substance could there be in foam? Suppose, monks, that in the autumn, when it is raining, and big raindrops are falling, a water bubble arises and bursts on the surface of the water. A man with good sight would inspect it, ponder it, and carefully investigate it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in a water bubble? So too, monks, whatever kind of feeling there is, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, a monk inspects it, ponders it, and carefully investigates it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in feeling? Suppose, monks, that in the last month of the hot season, at high noon, a shimmering mirage appears. A man with good sight would inspect it, ponder it, and carefully investigate it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in a mirage? So too, monks, whatever kind of perception there is, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, a monk inspects it, ponders it, and carefully investigates it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in perception? Suppose, monks, that a man needing heartwood, seeking heartwood, wandering in search of heartwood, would take a sharp axe and enter a forest. There he would see a trunk of a large banana tree, straight, fresh, without a fruit bud core. He would cut it down at the root, cut off the crown, and unroll the coil. As he unrolls the coil, he would not find even softwood, let alone heartwood. A man with good sight would inspect it, ponder it, and carefully investigate it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in the trunk of a banana tree? So too, monks, whatever kind of volitional formations there are, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near. A monk inspects them, ponders them, and carefully investigates them. As he investigates them, they appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in volitional formations? Suppose, monks, that a magician or a magician's apprentice would display a magical illusion at a crossroads. A man with good sight would inspect it, ponder it, and carefully investigate it. And it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in a magical illusion? So too, monks, whatever kind of consciousness there is, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near. A monk inspects it, ponders it, and carefully investigates it, and it would appear to him to be void, hollow, insubstantial. For what substance could there be in consciousness? Seeing thus, monks, the instructed noble disciple becomes disenchanted with form, disenchanted with feeling, disenchanted with perception, disenchanted with volitional formations, disenchanted with consciousness. Becoming disenchanted, he becomes dispassionate. Through dispassion, his mind is liberated. When it is liberated, there comes the knowledge. It's liberated. He understands. Destroyed is birth. The spiritual life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming back to any state of being. Samyutta Nikaya, 22.95. 3. 140 through 142. Verse 2. By way of the six sense bases. A. Full understanding. Monks, without directly knowing and fully understanding the All, without developing dispassion toward it and abandoning it, one is incapable of destroying suffering. And what, monks, is that All? Without directly knowing and fully understanding the I, without developing dispassion toward it and abandoning it, one is incapable of destroying suffering. Without directly knowing and fully understanding forms, eye consciousness, eye contact, and whatever feeling arises with eye contact as condition, without developing dispassion toward it and abandoning it, one is incapable of destroying suffering. Without directly knowing and fully understanding the ear, the mind, and whatever feeling arises with mind contact as condition, without developing dispassion toward it and abandoning it, one is incapable of destroying suffering. This, monks, is the All. Without directly knowing and fully understanding this All, one is incapable of destroying suffering. Monks, by directly knowing and fully understanding the All, by developing dispassion toward it and abandoning it, one is capable of destroying suffering. And what, monks, is that All? By directly knowing and fully understanding the I, the mind, and whatever feeling arises with mind contact as condition, by developing dispassion toward it and abandoning it, one is capable of destroying suffering. This, monks, is the All by directly knowing and fully understanding which one is capable of destroying suffering. Samyutta Nikaya, 35.26, 4, 17 through 18. B. Burning. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Gaya, at Gaya's head, together with 1,000 monks. There, the Blessed One addressed the monks thus. Monks, all is burning. And what, monks, is the all that is burning? The eye is burning, forms are burning, eye consciousness is burning, eye contact is burning, and whatever feeling arises with eye contact as condition, whether pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant, that too is burning. Burning with what? Burning with the fire of lust, with the fire of hatred, with the fire of delusion, burning with birth, aging and death, with sorrow, lamentation, pain, dejection and despair, I say. The ear is burning, the mind is burning, and whatever feeling arises with mind contact as condition, whether pleasant or painful or neither pleasant nor painful, that too is burning. Burning with what? Burning with the fire of lust, with the fire of hatred, with the fire of delusion. Burning with birth, aging and death, with sorrow, lamentation, pain, dejection and despair, I say. Seeing thus, monks, the instructed noble disciple becomes disenchanted with the eye, with forms, with eye consciousness, with eye contact, with whatever feeling arises with eye contact as condition, whether pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant, becomes disenchanted with the ear, with the mind, with whatever feeling arises with mind contact as condition. Becoming disenchanted, he becomes dispassionate. Through dispassion, his mind is liberated. When it is liberated, there comes the knowledge. It's liberated. He understands, destroyed is birth, the spiritual life has been lived, what had to be done has been done. There is no more coming back to any state of being. This is what the Blessed One said. Elated, those monks delighted in the Blessed One's statement. And while this discourse was being spoken, the minds of the 1,000 monks were liberated from the taints by non-clinging. Samyutta Nikaya, 35-28, 4-19-20. C. Suitable for attaining Nibbana. Monks, I will teach you the way that is suitable for attaining Nibbana. Listen. And what, monks, is the way that is suitable for attaining Nibbana? Here, a monk sees the eye as impermanent. He sees forms as impermanent. He sees eye consciousness as impermanent. He sees eye contact as impermanent. He sees as impermanent whatever feeling arises with eye contact as condition, whether pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant. He sees the ear as impermanent. He sees the mind as impermanent. He sees mental phenomena as impermanent. He sees mind consciousness as impermanent. He sees mind contact as impermanent. He sees as impermanent whatever feeling arises with mind contact as condition, whether pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant. This, monks, is the way that is suitable for attaining Nibbana. He sees the eye as non-self. He sees as non-self whatever feeling arises with mind contact as condition, whether pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant. This, monks, is the way that is suitable for attaining Nibbana. Samyutta Nikaya, 35-147-149. Combined, 4-133-135. D. Empty is the world. Then the Venerable Ananda approached the Blessed One and said to him, Venerable Sir, it is said, empty is the world. Empty is the world. In what way, Venerable Sir, is it said, empty is the world? It is, Ananda, because it is empty of self and of what belongs to self that it is said, empty is the world. And what is empty of self and of what belongs to self? The eye, Ananda, is empty of self and of what belongs to self. Forms are empty of self and of what belongs to self. Eye consciousness is empty of self and of what belongs to self. Eye contact is empty of self and of what belongs to self. Whatever feeling arises with mind contact as condition, whether pleasant or painful, or neither painful nor pleasant, that too is empty of self and of what belongs to self. It is, Ananda, because it is empty of self and of what belongs to self that it is said, empty is the world. Samyutta Nikaya, 35-85. 4-54. E. Consciousness, too, is non-self. The Venerable Udayi asked the Venerable Ananda, Friend Ananda, in many ways the nature of this body has been declared, disclosed, and revealed by the Blessed One thus. For such a reason this body is non-self. Is it possible to explain the nature of this consciousness in a similar way? To teach, proclaim, establish, disclose, analyze, and elucidate it thus? For such a reason, this consciousness is non-self? It is possible, friend Udayi. Doesn't eye consciousness arise in dependence on the eye and forms? Yes, friend. If the cause and condition of the arising of eye consciousness would cease completely and totally without remainder, could eye consciousness be discerned? No, friend. In this way, friend, this has been declared, disclosed, and revealed by the Blessed One thus. For such a reason, this consciousness is non-self. Doesn't ear consciousness arise in dependence on the ear and sounds? Doesn't mind consciousness arise in dependence on the mind and mental phenomena? Yes, friend. If the cause and condition for the arising of mind consciousness would cease completely and totally without remainder, could mind consciousness be discerned? No, friend. In this way, too, friend, this has been declared, disclosed, and revealed by the Blessed One thus. For such a reason, this consciousness is non-self. Suppose, friend, a man needing heartwood, seeking heartwood, wandering in search of heartwood, would take a sharp axe and enter a forest. There he would see the trunk of a large banana tree, straight, fresh, without a fruit bud core. He would cut it down at the root, cut off the crown, and unroll the coil. As he unrolls the coil, he would not find even softwood, let alone heartwood. So too, a monk does not recognize either a self or anything belonging to a self in these six bases for contact. Since he does not recognize anything thus, he does not cling to anything in the world. Not clinging, he is not agitated. Being unagitated, he personally attains Nibbana. He understands, destroyed is birth. The spiritual life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming back to any state of being. Samyutta Nikaya, 35, 234, 4, 166 through 168. Verse 3, by way of the elements. The 18 elements. Monks, I will teach you the diversity of elements. The eye element, form element, eye consciousness element, the ear element, sound element, ear consciousness element, the nose element, odor element, nose consciousness element, the tongue element, taste element, tongue consciousness element, the body element, tactile object element, body consciousness element, the mind element, mental phenomena element, mind consciousness element. This, monks, is called the diversity of elements. Samyutta Nikaya, 14.1. 2. 140. B. The four elements. Monks, there are these four elements. What four? The earth element, the water element, the heat element, the air element. Those ascetics and Brahmins, monks, who do not understand as they really are the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of these four elements, these I do not consider to be ascetics among ascetics or Brahmins among Brahmins, and these venerable ones do not, by realizing it for themselves with direct knowledge, in this very life enter and dwell in the goal of asceticism or the goal of Brahminhood. But, monks, those ascetics and Brahmins who understand as they really are the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of these four elements, these I consider to be ascetics among ascetics and Brahmins among Brahmins. And these, venerable ones, by realizing it for themselves with direct knowledge, in this very life enter and dwell in the goal of asceticism and the goal of Brahminhood. Those ascetics or Brahmins, monks, who do not understand as they really are the origin and the passing away, the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of these four elements, these I do not consider to be ascetics among ascetics. But monks, those ascetics and Brahmins who understand these things, these I consider to be ascetics among ascetics and Brahmins among Brahmins. And these venerable ones, by realizing it for themselves with direct knowledge, in this very life enter and dwell in the goal of asceticism and the goal of Brahmanhood. Monks, those ascetics or Brahmins who do not understand the earth element, its origin, its cessation, and the way leading to its cessation, who do not understand the water element, the heat element, the air element, its origin, its cessation, and the way leading to its cessation, these I do not consider to be ascetics among ascetics. But monks, those ascetics and Brahmins who understand these things, these I consider to be ascetics among ascetics and Brahmins among Brahmins. And these venerable ones, by realizing it for themselves with direct knowledge, in this very life enter and dwell in the goal of asceticism and the goal of Brahmanhood. Samyutta Nikaya 14:37-39 Combined 2 175-177 C. The Six Elements 13. How, monk, does one not neglect wisdom? There are these six elements: the earth element, the water element, the fire element, the air element, the space element, and the consciousness element. 14. What, monk, is the earth element? The earth element may be either internal or external. What is the internal earth element? Whatever internally, belonging to oneself, is solid, solidified, and clung to, that is, head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, diaphragm, spleen, lungs, intestines, mesentery, stomach, feces, or whatever else internally, belonging to oneself, is solid, solidified, and clung to. This is called the internal earth element. Now both the internal earth element and the external earth element are simply earth element. And that should be seen as it really is with correct wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. When one sees it thus as it really is with correct wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the earth element and makes the mind dispassionate toward the earth element. 15. What, monk, is the water element? The water element may be either internal or external. What is the internal water element? Whatever internally belonging to oneself is water, watery, and clung to, that is, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, grease, spittle, snot, oil of the joints, urine, or whatever else internally belonging to oneself is water, watery, and clung to. This is called the internal water element. Now both the internal water element and the external water element are simply water element. And that should be seen as it really is with correct wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. When one sees it thus as it really is with correct wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the water element and makes the mind dispassionate toward the water element. 16. What, monk, is the fire element? The fire element may be either internal or external. What is the internal fire element? Whatever internally belonging to oneself is fire, fiery, and clung to. That is, that by which one is warmed, ages, and is consumed, and that by which what is eaten, drunk, consumed, and tasted gets completely digested, or whatever else internally belonging to oneself is fire, fiery, and clung to. This is called the internal fire element. Now, both the internal fire element and the external fire element are simply fire element. And that should be seen as it really is with correct wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. When one sees it thus, as it really is with correct wisdom, One becomes disenchanted with the fire element and makes the mind dispassionate toward the fire element. 17. What monk is the air element? The air element may be either internal or external. What is the internal air element? Whatever internally, belonging to oneself, is air, airy and clung to. That is, upgoing winds, downgoing winds, winds in the belly, winds in the bowels, winds that course through the limbs, in-breath and out-breath. Or whatever else internally, belonging to oneself, is air, airy and clung to. This is called the internal air element. Now, both the internal air element and the external air element are simply air element. And that should be seen as it really is with correct wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. When one sees it thus as it really is with correct wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the air element and makes the mind dispassionate toward the air element. 18. What monk is the space element? The space element may be either internal or external. What is the internal space element? Whatever internally, belonging to oneself, is space, spatial, and clung to. That is, the holes of the ears, the nostrils, the door of the mouth, and that aperture whereby what is eaten, drunk, consumed, and tasted gets swallowed, and where it collects, and where it is excreted from below, and whatever else internally, belonging to oneself, is space, spatial, and clung to. That is called the internal space element. Now, both the internal space element and the external space element are simply space element. And that should be seen as it really is with correct wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. When one sees it thus as it really is with correct wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the space element and makes the mind dispassionate toward the space element. 19. Then there remains only consciousness, purified and bright. What does one cognize with that consciousness? One cognizes, this is pleasant. One cognizes, this is painful. One cognizes, this is neither painful nor pleasant. In dependence on a contact to be felt as pleasant, there arises a pleasant feeling. When one feels a pleasant feeling, one understands, I feel a pleasant feeling. One understands, with the cessation of that same contact to be felt as pleasant, its corresponding feeling, the pleasant feeling that arose in dependence on that contact to be felt as pleasant, ceases and subsides. In dependence on a contact to be felt as painful, there arises a painful feeling. When one feels a painful feeling, one understands. I feel a painful feeling. One understands. With the cessation of that same contact to be felt as painful, its corresponding feeling, the painful feeling that arose in dependence on that contact to be felt as painful, ceases and subsides. In dependence on a contact to be felt as neither painful nor pleasant, there arises a neither painful nor pleasant feeling. When one feels a neither painful nor pleasant feeling, one understands, I feel a neither painful nor pleasant feeling. One understands, with the cessation of that same contact to be felt as neither painful nor pleasant, its corresponding feeling, the neither painful nor pleasant feeling that arose in dependence on that contact, to be felt as neither painful nor pleasant, ceases and subsides. Monk, just as from the contact and friction of two fire sticks heat is generated and fire is produced, and with the separation and disjunction of these two fire sticks, the corresponding heat ceases and subsides. So too, in dependence on a contact to be felt as pleasant, to be felt as painful, to be felt as neither painful nor pleasant, there arises a neither painful nor pleasant feeling. One understands. With the cessation of that same contact to be felt as neither painful nor pleasant, its corresponding feeling ceases and subsides. From Majjhima Nikaya 140. Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. 3, 240 through 243. Verse 4. By way of dependent origination. A. What is dependent origination? Monks, I will teach you dependent origination. Listen to that and attend closely. I will speak. Yes, venerable sir. Those monks replied. The Blessed One said this. And what, monks, is dependent origination? With ignorance as condition, volitional formations come to be. With volitional formations as conditions, consciousness. With consciousness as condition, name and form. With name and form as condition, the six sense bases. With the six sense bases as condition, contact. With contact as condition, feeling. With feeling as condition, craving. With craving as condition, clinging. With clinging as condition, existence. With existence as condition, birth. With birth as condition, aging and death. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, dejection, and despair come to be. Such is the origin of this whole mass of suffering. This, monks, is called dependent origination. But with the remainderless fading away and cessation of ignorance comes cessation of volitional formations. With the cessation of volitional formations, cessation of consciousness. With the cessation of consciousness, cessation of name and form. With the cessation of name and form, cessation of the six sense bases. With the cessation of the six sense bases, cessation of contact. With the cessation of contact, cessation of feeling. With the cessation of feeling, cessation of craving. With the cessation of craving, cessation of clinging. With the cessation of clinging, cessation of existence. With the cessation of existence, cessation of birth. With the cessation of birth, aging and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, dejection, and despair cease. Such is the cessation of this whole mass of suffering. Samyutta Nikaya, 12.1, 2, 1 through 2. B. The stableness of the Dhamma. Monks, I will teach you dependent origination and dependently arisen phenomena. Listen and attend closely. I will speak. Yes, venerable sir. Those monks replied. The Blessed One said this. And what, monks, is dependent origination? With birth as condition, aging and death comes to be. Whether there is an arising of Tathagatas or no arising of Tathagatas, that element still persists. The stableness of the Dhamma, the fixed course of the Dhamma, specific conditionality. A Tathagata awakens to this and breaks through to it. Having done so, he explains it, teaches it, proclaims it, establishes it, discloses it, analyzes it, elucidates it. And he says, see, with birth as condition, monks, aging and death arises. With existence as condition, birth. With clinging as condition, existence. With craving as condition, clinging. With feeling as condition, craving. With contact as condition, feeling. With the six sense bases as condition, contact. With name and form as condition, the six sense bases. With consciousness as condition, name and form. With volitional formations as conditions, consciousness. With ignorance as condition, volitional formations. Whether there is an arising of Tathagatas or no arising of Tathagatas, that element still persists. The stableness of the Dhamma, the fixed course of the Dhamma, specific conditionality. A Tathagata awakens to this and breaks through to it. Having done so, he explains it, teaches it, proclaims it, establishes it, discloses it, analyzes it, elucidates it. And he says, see, with ignorance as condition, monks, volitional formations arise. Thus, monks, the actuality, The inerrancy, the invariability, the specific conditionality in this, this is called dependent origination. And what, monks, are the dependently arisen phenomena? Aging and death, monks, is impermanent, conditioned, dependently arisen, subject to destruction, vanishing, fading away, and cessation. Birth is impermanent. Existence is impermanent. Clinging is impermanent. Craving is impermanent. Feeling is impermanent. Contact is impermanent. The six sense bases are impermanent. Name and form is impermanent. Consciousness is impermanent. Volitional formations are impermanent. Ignorance is impermanent. Conditioned. Dependently arisen. Subject to destruction. Vanishing, fading away, and cessation. These, monks, are called the dependently arisen phenomena. When, monks, a noble disciple has clearly seen with correct wisdom as it really is this dependent origination and these dependently arisen phenomena, it is impossible that he will run back into the past thinking, "Did I exist in the past? Did I not exist in the past? What was I in the past? How was I in the past? Having been what? What did I become in the past?" Or that he will run forward into the future, thinking, "Will I exist in the future? Will I not exist in the future? What will I be in the future? How will I be in the future? Having been what will I become in the future?" Or that he will now be inwardly confused about the present, thus, "Do I exist? Do I not exist? What am I? How am I? This being, where has it come from? And where will it go?" For what reason? Because the noble disciple has clearly seen with correct wisdom as it really is this dependent origination and these dependently arisen phenomena. Samyutta Nikaya 12:20, 2:25-27. C. 44 cases of knowledge. Monks, I will teach you 44 cases of knowledge. Listen to that and attend closely. I will speak. "Yes, venerable sir," those monks replied. The Blessed One said this. "Monks, what are the 44 cases of knowledge? Knowledge of aging and death. Knowledge of its origin. Knowledge of its cessation. Knowledge of the way leading to its cessation. Knowledge of birth. Knowledge of existence. Knowledge of clinging. Knowledge of craving. Knowledge of feeling. Knowledge of contact. Knowledge of the six sense bases. Knowledge of name and form. Knowledge of consciousness. Knowledge of volitional formations. Knowledge of their origin. Knowledge of their cessation. Knowledge of the way leading to their cessation. These, monks, are the 44 cases of knowledge." And what, monks, is aging and death? Definition as in text 4, 3, stanza 22. Thus, this aging and this death are together called aging and death. With the arising of birth, there is the arising of aging and death. With the cessation of birth, there is the cessation of aging and death. This noble eightfold path is the way leading to the cessation of aging and death, that is, right view, right concentration. When, monks, a noble disciple thus understands aging and death, its origin, its cessation, and the way leading to its cessation, this is his knowledge of the principle. By means of this principle that is seen, understood, immediately attained, fathomed, he applies the methods to the past and the future thus. Whatever ascetics and Brahmins in the past directly knew aging and death, its origin, its cessation, and the way leading to its cessation, all these directly knew it in the very same way that I do now. Whatever ascetics and Brahmins in the future will directly know aging and death, its origin, its cessation, and the way leading to its cessation, all these will directly know it in the very same way that I do now. This is his knowledge of entailment. When, monks, a noble disciple has purified and cleansed these two kinds of knowledge, knowledge of the principle and knowledge of entailment, he is then called a noble disciple, who is accomplished in view, accomplished in vision, who has arrived at this true Dhamma, who sees this true Dhamma, who possesses a trainee's knowledge, a trainee's true knowledge, who has entered the stream of the Dhamma, a noble one with penetrative wisdom, one who stands squarely before the door to the deathless. And what, monks, is birth? What are the volitional formations? Definitions, as in text 4.3. This noble eightfold path is the way leading to the cessation of volitional formations, that is, right view, right concentration. When, monks, a noble disciple thus understands volitional formations, their origin, their cessation, and the way leading to their cessation, this is his knowledge of the principle. By means of this principle that is seen, understood, immediately attained, fathomed, he applies the method to the past and to the future. This is his knowledge of entailment. When, monks, a noble disciple has purified and cleansed these two kinds of knowledge, knowledge of the principle and knowledge of entailment, he is then called a noble disciple who is accomplished in view, one who stands squarely before the door to the deathless. Samyutta Nikaya, 12.33, 2, 56 through 59. D. A teaching by the middle. At Savatthi, the venerable Kakanagotta approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side, and said to him, "Venerable Sir, it is said, right view, right view. In what way, Venerable Sir, is there right view?" This world, Kakana, for the most part depends upon a duality, upon the idea of existence and the idea of non-existence. But for one who sees the origin of the world as it really is with correct wisdom, there is no idea of non-existence in regard to the world. And for one who sees the cessation of the world as it really is with correct wisdom, there is no idea of existence in regard to the world. This world, Kakana, is for the most part shackled by engagement, clinging, and adherence. But this one, with right view, does not become engaged and cling through that engagement and clinging. Mental standpoint, adherence, underlying tendency. He does not take a stand about myself. He has no perplexity or doubt that what arises is only suffering arising. What ceases is only suffering ceasing. His knowledge about this is independent of others. It is in this way, Kakana, that there is right view. All exists, Kakana. This is one extreme. All does not exist. This is the second extreme. Without veering toward either of these extremes, the Tathagata teaches the Dhamma by the middle. With ignorance as condition, volitional formations come to be. With volitional formations as conditions, consciousness. Such is the origin of this whole mass of suffering. But with the remainderless fading away and cessation of ignorance comes cessation of volitional formations. With the cessation of volitional formations, cessation of consciousness. Such is the cessation of this whole mass of suffering. Samyutta Nikaya, 12.15, 2, 16 through 17. E. The continuance of consciousness. Monks, what one intends and what one plans, and whatever one has a tendency toward, this becomes a basis for the continuance of consciousness. When there is a basis, there is a support for the establishing of consciousness. When consciousness is established and has come to growth, there is the production of future renewed existence. When there is the production of future renewed existence, future birth, aging and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, dejection, and despair come to be. Such is the origin of this whole mass of suffering. If, monks, one does not intend and does not plan, but still has a tendency toward something, this becomes a basis for the continuance of consciousness. When there is a basis, there is a support for the establishing of consciousness. Such is the origin of this whole mass of suffering. But monks, when one does not intend and does not plan and does not have a tendency toward anything, no basis exists for the continuance of consciousness. When there is no basis, there is no support for the establishing of consciousness. When consciousness is unestablished and does not come to growth, there is no production of future renewed existence. When there is no production of future renewed existence, future birth, aging and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, dejection, and despair cease. Such is the cessation of this whole mass of suffering. Samyutta Nikaya 12:38. 2. 65-66. F. The origin and passing of the world. Monks, I will teach you the origin and passing away of the world. Listen and attend closely. I will speak. Yes, venerable sir, the monks replied. The Blessed One said this. And what, monks, is the origin of the world? Independence on the eye and forms, eye consciousness arises. The meeting of the three is contact. With contact as condition, feeling comes to be. With feeling as condition, craving. With craving as condition, clinging. With clinging as condition, existence. With existence as condition, birth. With birth as condition, aging and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, dejection and despair come to be. This, monks, is the origin of the world. Independence on the ear and sounds, independence on the nose and odors, independence on the tongue and tastes, independence on the body and tactile objects, independence on the mind and mental phenomena, mind consciousness arises. The meeting of the three is contact. With contact as condition, feeling comes to be. With feeling as condition, craving. With craving as condition, clinging. Existence, birth. With birth as condition, aging and death. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, dejection and despair come to be. This, monks, is the origin of the world. And what, monks, is the passing away of the world? Independence on the eye and forms, eye consciousness arises. The meeting of the three is contact. With contact as condition, feeling comes to be. With feeling as condition, craving. But with the remainderless fading away and cessation of that same craving comes cessation of clinging. With the cessation of clinging, cessation of existence. With the cessation of existence, cessation of birth. With the cessation of birth, aging and death. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, dejection and despair cease. Such is the cessation of this whole mass of suffering. This, monks, is the passing away of the world. Independence on the ear and sounds, independence on the mind and mental phenomena. Mind consciousness arises. The meeting of the three is contact. With contact as condition, feeling comes to be. With feeling as condition, craving. But with the remainderless fading away and cessation of that same craving comes cessation of clinging, cessation of existence, cessation of birth. With the cessation of birth, aging and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, dejection and despair cease. Such is the cessation of this whole mass of suffering. This, monks, is the passing away of the world. Samyutta Nikaya 12:44, 2:73-74. Verse 5. By way of the Four Noble Truths. A. The Truths of All Buddhas. Monks, whatever perfectly enlightened Buddhas in the past fully awakened to things as they really are, all fully awakened to the Four Noble Truths as they really are. Whatever perfectly enlightened Buddhas in the future will fully awaken to things as they really are, all will fully awaken to the Four Noble Truths as they really are. Whatever perfectly enlightened Buddhas at present have fully awakened to things as they really are, all have fully awakened to the Four Noble Truths as they really are. What for? The Noble Truth of Suffering. The Noble Truth of the Origin of Suffering. The Noble Truth of the Cessation of Suffering. The Noble Truth of the Way Leading to the Cessation of Suffering. Whatever perfectly enlightened Buddhas fully awakened, will fully awaken, have fully awakened to things as they really are, all have fully awakened to these Four Noble Truths as they really are. Therefore, monks, an exertion should be made to understand. This is suffering. An exertion should be made to understand. This is the origin of suffering. An exertion should be made to understand. This is the cessation of suffering. An exertion should be made to understand. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. Samyutta Nikaya 56.24 5. 433 through 434. B. These four truths are actual. Monks, these four truths are actual, unerring, invariable. What for? This is suffering. This, monks, is actual, unerring, invariable. This is the origin of suffering. This is actual, unerring, invariable. This is the cessation of suffering. This is actual, unerring, invariable. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. This is actual, unerring, invariable. These four things, monks, are actual, unerring, invariable. Therefore, monks, an exertion should be made to understand. This is suffering. An exertion should be made to understand. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. Samyutta Nikaya 56.20 5. 430 through 431. C. A handful of leaves. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Kosambi, in a Simpasa grove. Then the Blessed One took up a few Simpasa leaves in his hand and addressed the monks thus, "What do you think, monks? Which is more numerous? These few leaves that I have taken up in my hand, or those in the grove overhead?" "Venerable sir, the leaves that the Blessed One has taken up in his hand are few, but those in the grove overhead are numerous." "So too, monks, the things I have directly known but have not taught you are numerous, while the things I have taught you are few. And why, monks, have I not taught those many things?" "Because they are without benefit, irrelevant to the fundamentals of the spiritual life, and do not lead to disenchantment, to dispassion, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to nibbana. Therefore I have not taught them." "And what, monks, have I taught?" "I have taught, this is suffering. I have taught, this is the origin of suffering. I have taught, this is the cessation of suffering. I have taught, this is the way leading to the cessation of suffering." "And why, monks, have I taught this?" "Because this is beneficial, relevant to the fundamentals of the spiritual life, and leads to disenchantment, to dispassion, to cessation, to peace, to direct knowledge, to enlightenment, to nibbana. Therefore, I have taught this." "Therefore, monks, an exertion should be made to understand. This is suffering. An exertion should be made to understand. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering." Samyutta Nikaya 56.31 5. 437 through 438. D. Because of not understanding. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Vajjayans at Kotigama. There the Blessed One addressed the monks thus, "Monks, it is because of not understanding and not penetrating the Four Noble Truths that you and I have roamed and wandered through this long course of samsara. What for? It is, monks, because of not understanding and not penetrating the noble truth of suffering that you and I have roamed and wandered through this long course of samsara. It is because of not understanding and not penetrating the noble truth of the origin of suffering, the noble truth of the cessation of suffering,